difficulty of crossing the rushing water. It's white and foamy, angry-looking. I have no reference for how dangerous the current is, but it may be the only chance we have of shaking the people from our tail. Flying in from above, Blue comes into view, black and rainbow feathers reflecting in the sunlight as he lands on a rock beside us.
"Any change in their movements?"
Aker asks. He speaks as if the bird understands every word out of his mouth. Blue shakes his head, feathers puffing out before settling again.
"How many?"
He clicks his beak. 10 times. "Down by 2 now," I say, getting the gist of their communication.
"They could have split to follow the false trail I planted."
We turn to look at the foamy water. I don't have the strength to make it, and I don't think Aker can carry me without the water taking us under. He twists the forearm I have my legs draped over and holds his hand out, fingers pointing toward the opposite bank, eyes searching for something. No, feeling for something. I'm not sure what until I see the tiny specks of rock ascending from the river. Aker points his fingers down the embankment, rattling a few bigger rocks as he passes over them with his magic. He's searching for any that are veined with heavy metals. He looks at me.
"Can you hold on to me if I put you on my back?"
I nod. Even if I can't, I will. There's no other option. I wrap my arms and legs around him, and he grabs me under each of my knees, shifting me higher on his back. Then, widening his stance, he stretches out his hands toward the river. Palms upright, he pulls, fingers curling in. It takes a moment, but then I see them. My breath catches at the sight of rock shards and raw metals arising from the water, some as small as a pebble and some as large as a coconut. They glint wetly in the afternoon sun. Veins bulge up Aker's arms as he concentrates. As if pulled by an invisible hand, the sediment converges into a floating bridge before us. Aker keeps one hand before him to maintain the structure, the other under one of my knees, and places his first foot onto the bridge. Freezing cold water splashes at his feet, the bridge dipping slightly under our weight. But Aker doesn't stop. One foot in front of the other, we cross the angry rapids until we reach the opposite embankment. Aker drops his hand and the bridge falls, causing a rain of rocks to disappear under the white rapids, leaving no trace of our path behind us. Aker's chest rises and falls, the effort of concentration dispelling along with the tension in his muscles.
"Are you okay?"
I'm shaking from the energy it takes to maintain a hold around him, sweat coating my skin. "Yes," I reply, in awe.
"Good."
He returns his grip to the back of my legs and holds me against him.
"We need to put distance between us and here, so I'm going to move quickly."
It's the only warning I get before he takes off in a jog through the trees. He runs until the sunlight begins to fade, and I lose my fight for consciousness not long after, despite the jolting of his gait. Chapter 28. This time, I know for a fact the ground is moving beneath me before I wake. We're nestled in the crook of 2 fallen trees. Based on their state of decay, they've been here a long time. Blue sits atop a broken limb, head tucked under a wing as he sleeps. The sun is low in the sky, telling me I've been out for a while. Aker's chest rises and falls in a steady rhythm. He has an arm draped over my legs, which are curled in his lap, his other around my back, palm flattened at the top of my spine to keep me locked against his chest. I don't move, afraid to wake him. His heart beats steady in my ear, and a sudden bout of loneliness hits me. I've left everything I know, everyone I know, to travel to a place I've never been before. Not just any place, but a home I've only caught bits and pieces of in my dreams. Aker's not my friend. He's a man who's been with me along the way, who risked his own life multiple times to protect me. A friend from a previous life. A life that could have been, maybe, but he's only here due to a promise he made to my family, to my mother. I don't know how much longer it'll take us to reach Kenta, but our time together is coming to an end. I take a moment to catalog my pain level, ignoring the slight ache in my chest. Wary, I reach out a hand to touch the dirt on the other side of Aker.
It feels cool. Lifting my fingers to my face, I scrub the pads of my fingers together, feeling the grit of the dirt between them. I have a strange urge to taste it. I bring the tip of my finger to my tongue, which I regret instantly. I hurry to scrape it off, regret hitting me harder as I bite down on tiny grains of sand. My head bobs from Acre's silent laughter, alerting me that he's awake. Probably been awake the whole time, if I had to guess. His chest jerks as he struggles to keep his laughter contained before he loses the battle, a rumble of sound pouring from his mouth. I can't help but smile in return. I don't know why I did that, I admit, embarrassed. My comment only serves to make him laugh harder, and Blue's head pops out from his wing. I don't move from Maker's lap, but I lift a hand for him to perch on. He's been such a good help, communicating with Acre while I've been sick. He's deserving of some neck scratches. He makes the short leap to my hand and bends for me to get the pesky spot behind his head, but only briefly. He blinks at me, then flies away. Feeling rejected, I pull my hand back. That was strange. Acre runs a hand down my back in a soothing gesture.
He's been keeping the perimeter for days. Hasn't paired well with hunting. He's probably searching for breakfast.
That's fair. I turn my attention to Acre, looking at him for the first time since waking. His eyes are soft but alert. A few hours of sleep did him good. I don't think I'll ever get used to being under his sole attention. He continues to rub his hand along the length of my spine, sending goosebumps down my legs when he reaches the dip in my lower back.
Any more dreams?
A few, but they were too confusing to make sense of. Eyes searching mine, he says.
Tell me about them.
Well, there was this raging bear. It had blood-red eyes and ran on its back legs as it chased me. Acre stills, then bursts into another round of laughter. The sound is somehow even more lovely than the one from a moment ago. I smack him in the chest. It's not funny! It was terrifying! That only makes him laugh harder. Annoyed, I shove away from him. He reaches for me, but I bat his hands away. It's not until my torn pants expose my knees to the moist soil underneath that I realize I'm kneeling on the ground between Acre's legs. He notices at the exact same moment I do, his laughter dying in his throat, eyes steady as he takes in the sight of me before him.
How do you feel?
I make a face as I struggle to put into words the feeling in my bones. I lower my hands to the dirt, palms flat to the earth. It feels... I'm scared to say it, but I can't think of any reason to withhold the truth from him. Strange, I say, but there's no pain. He doesn't react like I thought he would. It's not that I was expecting an outburst of some kind, but I wasn't expecting the blank expression on his face. Like he's lost. Shaking his head, the smile returns to his face, smaller, but there.
Alice used to scare you with stories of a bear he called Fang Hands, who waited in the woods for little girls in pretty dresses to walk by.
I scowl at him. I don't have many positive thoughts regarding your friend Alice, I say. Sounds like a rightful Acre leaps to his feet and pulls me up with him, my back to his front a split second before men pour into the space around us. They flow in from between the trees, swords and bows aimed in our direction from all sides. Like the fish that use camouflage to hunt stealthily on the reef, they're dressed in shades of green and brown and adorned with foliage, perfectly blending in with the terrain. It's 9 against 2. I've seen Acre take down 4 men with ease, but 9? I haven't used my legs in days, and I feel like a newborn calf as I gain my footing, Acre's arm banded around my waist to help steady me. I note the soldiers with swords. I'd need to get close enough to wrangle one from their hands, but I'm much too spent to perform that miracle, let alone wield a weapon after a struggle. A 10th man strides into the makeshift circle. He's tall with light hair, eyes a stark blue. It's eerie how similar he looks to the Alaha in appearance.
Hold on to your weapons.
He speaks to his men without looking away from us.
We have the Soldier of Chaos amongst us.
A frisson of unease flits around the circle, but none of them move, only their hands as they tighten on their weapons. The man dips his head in acknowledgement.
Ace,
he says,
eyes on Acre. By the tightness of Acre's posture behind me, it's obvious he is well acquainted with the man before us.
Vad, desertion looks terrible on you.
The threadbare shirt and ripped pants don't temper the steel in Vad's gaze.
You don't look too well yourself.
I do my best to not appear as feeble as I feel, but something tells me he can see straight through my facade.
And what do you have here?
Nothing you or your men are interested in,
Acre says firmly.
I assure you. I think you're wrong.
Acre's tone goes chilly, but I can tell there's a cold-hearted smile on his face without looking at him.
I'm never wrong.
You're in the wrong now, being across treaty lines. Spoken as a man of treason,
Acre says.
Cut the morality bullshit, Acre. We both know who's the most bloodthirsty here.
Acre doesn't speak or move behind me.
There's no need to worry.
Vad's eyes flick to me for a brief moment.
She's run through multiple scenarios of you killing every man in this clearing. She's not scared of you. Quite the opposite, actually.
I freeze. Impossible.
I'm an oracle, darling,
he says.
How did you think I managed to ambush your elemental friend? You'd be smart to remember that now you've returned home.
It's Acre's turn to go stock still. Nothing but solid muscle ready to spring at my back. Vad knows who I am and where I come from.
Jovinia, the lost princess of Melee. Or do you prefer to go by Bryn?
I haven't given my name much thought. Neither of them feel right. I suppose, if I had to choose, it would be Acre's version.
Jovi it is,
Vad says with a smile. Acre damn near snarls in reply. Vad lifts a hand to quell his anger.
If your goal is peace between our lands, we can forget I ever saw you. No blood needs to be spilled today.
The pointed look Vad gives me sends a chill down my spine. The blade at my waist gives me little reassurance. Acre moves his arm across my upper chest, his breath a warm caress against my cheek.
You don't have to make me out to be the bad guy, Vad. I have no problem playing my part. And, as you've already discovered, she doesn't mind.
In the deep recess in the back of my mind, I feel Vad's power like a single lick of flame in the darkest night. There is no barrier. Nothing to stop him seeing whatever it is he desires. The flame passes over and through my memories, inspecting them, searching. I can't stop the shake in my bones. I've known fear, but never like this. I pretend my mind is a well to douse the fire in my brain. I imagine the water overtaking the magic invading the space, but Vad's power overpowers any chance of keeping my innermost thoughts private. He can see and hear and feel anything he pleases. My mind is weak, weaker than I ever knew. His smile only grows at my realization as he relishes my secrets.
Anything you'd like to know?
He asks Acre.
Get out of her head.
He seethes. Vad is unfazed. He lifts a knowing brow at the man behind me.
I know you're curious.
Acre's nearly vibrating with anger.
No,
he demands. Like blowing out a candle, the flame turns to smoke in my mind, leaving the residue of soot behind.
She finds the idea abhorrent,
Vad divulges.
Sending children into battle? Matter of fact, I'm sure she'll agree with turning herself over to spare it happening on her behalf.
Nausea rolls through me. I can't tell if it's from the invasion of privacy or the awakening.
I have no desire to be anyone's sacrifice,
I declare, correcting him. No matter what he can glean from my mind, I want him to hear the truth. I would rather die than go anywhere with you. I can feel Acre smile against the shell of my ear.
Do women express that sentiment to you often, Vad? That they'd rather die than be in your presence?
He makes a clicking sound with his tongue.
Embarrassing.
Vad smiles.
You've always been a cocky son of a bitch. Tell him to back off,
Acre says. One of the men to our right has been inching himself toward our flank this entire time.
I don't have any authority over these men, Ace,
And yet, you've led them to their deaths.
Vad shakes his head.
You're not going to kill any of these men.
There's obvious familiarity between the two of them, and something in the way Vad holds himself gives Aker pause. I can feel his hesitancy behind me.
How do you figure?
Vad takes a step to our left, and each of the men follow, creating a counterclockwise motion around us.
Because she's dying.
I blink. I must have misheard him, because I thought he said...
You've suspected it.
Vad takes another step. Then another. His men following the same pattern.
You knew her body was probably too weak to make it through the awakening without a healer. You wanted to turn back to Kenta, where you knew a healer would be on standby the moment you made landfall.
Aker doesn't adjust our position, letting Vad disappear behind our backs. They're closing in on us, but he doesn't make any moves. As firm as a tree, his feet are planted to the ground. Still. Lethal.
But she pushed, and you conceded. She was miserable on that boat, and you hated watching her break down a little more each day.
Aker's voice comes out low and cold.
That's enough. Tell me,
Vad says, reappearing in our peripheral.
Is it different to witness on land? Does it make it easier to tolerate? I said that's enough.
An imperceptible quiver travels through Aker's body, barely concealed rage, desperate to get out. I further relax into his hold, hoping to communicate that he needs to remain in control, to remain calm, my own emotions notwithstanding.
I don't need to see inside your mind to know the truth.
Vad completes his circle, stopping before us once again.
That's a symptom of being a mind reader since I was 12. It leaves little mystery as to the human condition. People are...
He thinks on it a moment, eyes going skyward before returning to us with renewed energy.
Boring.
Each breath feels more labored than the one before. I focus on keeping a steady rhythm, afraid to let on how worn down I am just from standing. Even with Aker to lean on, my strength is waning. By the look on Vad's face, I don't think I'm doing a good job disguising my feebleness.
You've been practicing your mental defenses. I'm impressed at your ability to keep me out.
Aker doesn't speak. From the looks of the men surrounding us, it makes them uneasy, eyes shifting between them, uncertain about what is to come next.
I'll make you a deal.
He snaps his fingers and points in Aker's direction.
I'll tell you the location of a healer here in Roysen if you let me inside your memories for 30 seconds.
Aker laughs, a quick chuckle of disbelief.
You're delusional. Am I?
Vad makes a face.
It's more than a day's ride by horseback to the border.
Before Vad can utter another word, breathe another breath, the whiz of air being pierced sounds through the clearing. It's unmistakable. In the next instant, I'm punched in the chest. I look down. A wooden reed is protruding from the side of my sternum. Aker pivoted us in the split second before impact, having seen the incoming arrow, causing it to just miss my heart. Sticking out from between my ribs, the reed pulses with my every heartbeat.
I choke on a scream that refuses to leave my throat, a half-gurgled groan escaping instead.
Aker growls, voice erupting as he throws out his hand. The men's weapons fly from their sides into their necks and those of the men standing next to them. Half of them are dead before they hit the ground. There's another zip in the air, another wooden arrow narrowly missing Aker's jugular as he angles us away from its trajectory.
Stop!
Vad shouts. His men listen. Aker does not. He recalls his blade from one of the felled corpses into his spare hand.
If you kill me or anyone else, you'll never know where to find the healer, and Jovi will die before you're able to get to the border.
Liquid bubbles up my throat, and I cough. Red flecks of blood splatter onto the hand I have pressed around the entrance wound. I'm grateful for Aker's hold. My legs would give out otherwise.
Fine.
Aker spits.
My mind is open.
Vad shakes his head, smile returning, taunting Aker as it grows.
You'll only kill us after. No. I want a blood oath. You will swear not to harm us.
Aker doesn't hesitate. He lifts his hand and uses his magic to swipe his blade across his open palm.
With this blood, I swear to do no harm to you or the men here today as long as Jovi doesn't die.
He squeezes his fist and lets the blood drip to the ground along with the weapon. Vad seems less pleased with Aker's terms, but he doesn't voice his displeasure. Aker speaks through clenched teeth.
On with it.
As he tilts his head to the side, Vad's eyes zoom in on Aker before going blank. The arm Aker has banded around me tightens, but his body goes stock still behind me. I concentrate on breathing. Each inhale feels tighter than the last, and the taste of metal coats the back of my tongue. I know it's only 30 seconds, no more than the same number of breaths, but it feels like a lifetime before Vad's eyes focus again and life returns to Aker's body. Whatever knowledge Vad was able to garner from Aker better have been worth it.
There's a brook that cuts west. Follow it through the woods until you come across the trees covered in moss. There's a cottage tucked between the trees. It's disguised, so keep your eyes peeled. How far? 20 minutes,
Vad says, eyes falling on me.
If you run.
Aker cradles me to his chest. I cough again, and I can feel the blood hot on my chin and neck. A man's scream comes from high in the trees. From the archer, I presume.
What is that?
One of the men on the ground asks, fear in his voice.
You said you wouldn't harm us.
Aker turns his back on the men as more screaming ensues.
I didn't say anything about the bird.
Bird?
I can't see Blue, but I hear his battle cry a moment before the shrieks turn into garbled moans, then choked silence. There's a long pause before the sounds of the men fleeing for their lives echo behind us. But Aker doesn't look back or wait. He runs. Chapter 29.
We should kill him and turn his head over to the king.
Another male voice chimes in.
He can kill you without moving a muscle, boy. I suggest you keep your mouth shut.
Aker's voice is laced with rage.
I'll kill you both if you let her die.
Every breath is a struggle. Fluid gurgles into my throat and mouth with each inhale. I want it to end. But death doesn't seem willing to make this quick for me. An older female voice says,
Who's at the door?
There's a stretch of silence, the only noise my shallow breathing.
You're the healer,
Aker says, losing the hardness in his tone, desperation seeping through. Cold fingers trail my cheek.
She isn't fully awakened,
the female says. A moment passes before she continues.
Trying to push her body through the awakening while healing her will kill her before the injury does. I'm sorry. There's nothing I can do for her.
Try,
he demands, a weak order as his voice breaks on the single word.
Please.
There's a deep breath of consideration before she orders the other men to gather oils and herbs from her apothecary cabinet.
We'll go to the temple.
There's no time for your fanatical bullshit,
Aker spits, anger returning full force.
Here. Do it here.
You don't know everything, Metalslinger. You will do what I say, and threatening me with death will do you no good,
she tacks on. I sink in and out of consciousness. There's a hot poker shoved through my chest, but I feel removed from it all, like I'm separate from my body, and I only exist in my mind. Memories stack on top of each other, not just from my early childhood, of my father as he tucked me into bed, a blank space where his face should be, but also from my time in Alaha, when Kai began teaching me how to hold my breath for long dives underwater. The recollections volley back and forth, over and over, like my soul is trying to mesh the two histories together. Then I'm catapulted into the real world, screaming from the searing pain when the arrow is ripped from my body.
Hold her down!
The woman yells. Hands pin my arms and legs to a hard slab of rock, my eyes locking on Aker's above me. He's sweating, eyes wild and teeth mashed together as he holds my shoulders down. I can't stop screaming long enough to formulate words, but I'm begging him. Stop this.
Let me free.
He looks away, toward the woman as she begins to speak.
Do it.
Then she puts her hands on my chest. It's worse than the awakening. Worse than the reed that pierced my chest. Indescribable in every way. Pure agony. My body bows away from the table. I've lost all control. I fight to get away from myself. Shouts breach my muted senses, not mine, but of the people holding me down. One of the men begs a god I don't know for mercy. The woman barks commands.
Close your eyes! Don't open them unless you want to go blind!
I don't know what she's talking about. I can't see anything. Endless nothing before me, behind me, in every direction. I can only feel the hands on my bare skin, hear the words of the woman as she resumes the task at hand. Acre's hair tickles my brow, and I realize his forehead is pressed against mine, his hands the most prominent weight on my shoulders. I'm teleported into a memory, different from the ones I've dreamed of before. I'm standing on a cliff overlooking the sea as I turn to face Hallas. His appearance is clear for the first time, but he's grown. A man stands before me with deep auburn hair, freckles blending with a tan of his skin.
What if she's too far gone?
Hallas says. His golden eyes pierce my own, steady as he gives me time to consider my answer. No. Not my answer. Acre's.
I can't abandon her.
His thoughts weave through me like they're mine. No one has gone to Alaha and returned to tell the tale. Mercenaries and spies killed under a veil of secrecy. Ren has crafted a persona as a doting leader of his people. The body parts we've received in messenger bags beg to differ. I'll arrive in broad daylight. It's the only way to prevent Ren from killing me outright. His power is muted over the ocean, so he can't persuade the minds of that many people in his favor if he kills a man in cold blood. Weather permitting, we'll embark in the morning. Hallas nods.
The galleon will release a peace flare when you arrive at their docks.
I reach for the blade strapped to my outer thigh, but find nothing. I feel incomplete without it, but it brings me solace that it found its way back to her.
Send word to her family, no matter the outcome.
Hallas nods and places a hand on my shoulder.
May the next time you two reunite go better than the first.
I shove his arm from my shoulder, trying to disguise the strain in my walk as we head back to port. My ankle aches despite the healer's touch, but a smile pulls at my mouth in anticipation. I'm going to get Jovi. Chapter 30. Acre sits in a chair at the foot of the bed, head propped against a closed fist like he fought and lost the battle to stay awake. His upper chest and arms are bathed in dried mud and blood and God knows what other gunk, his hair crusty from where it's matted against his forehead and temples. Light pours in from the lone window behind him, outlining his body in a silhouette of gold. He's in sharp juxtaposition with myself as I pull the clean lace gown away from my body at the neckline, inspecting the pink scar that spans the space between my breasts, a singular line where the arrow pierced me. I'm in a small bed in the center of the room. The creaking of floorboards sounds from the other side of the door, followed by a knock that snaps Acre awake. He stands when the door opens, the top of his head nearly touching the roof. The healer steps in, slow and measured as she looks toward Acre. There's a tray of food in her hands. She looks at me and dips her head and upper body into a bow.
I brought food.
Acre shifts on his feet as the woman approaches the bed, settling the tray at the foot. My stomach growls at the smell of the chicken and rice and green vegetables. Acre's nostrils flare, his stomach undoubtedly doing the same.
There's plenty for you both, and there's more where it came from if you're left unsatisfied.
This is odd. She's acting as if we're guests of honor. How much time am I missing? The last thing I can recall was being held to a stone slab. I wasn't just healed, but also forced through the last remnants of the awakening. The memories of screams that weren't mine. She must sense my discomfort. Or maybe it's Acre's. Neither of us is demonstrating common manners. I force a smile.
Thank you.
She returns the smile with a much more genuine one.
Fia,
she says, introducing herself.
I don't hesitate. Jovi.
You two are welcome to stay as long as you need.
She gives a pointed look in Acre's direction.
The washroom is free if you'd like to use it.
Then she bows again before walking back out the door. Acre lets out a breath and runs a hand over his face, sinking back in the chair. His eyes scan the length of my body, scrutinizing every inch of me as if he's checking to make sure I didn't sustain any further injuries while he was asleep.
How do you feel?
I shrug. Normal. He drops his gaze.
Just normal?
Well, now that he mentions it, my magic, it feels alert. Like I'm going to die if I don't eat my weight in food. He smiles a little.
It's a consequence of exerting your energy. Magic always comes with a price.
I hold up my hands, inspecting them for a sign of my new gifts. Narrowing my eyes on him, I throw an arm in his direction, aiming for the dagger at his waist. Nothing happens. His smile tilts to one side.
Nice try.
I make a noise of disappointment. He shakes his head once.
You're not an elemental.
Then what am I? Breathing deep, his grin lessens a degree.
I'm not sure yet.
But you have an idea. Elbow resting on the arm of the chair, he bites the pad of his thumb as he further inspects me. He's so far away. After being physically in contact with him in some way or other for weeks now, the 8 feet of space between us feels like a chasm, like I'm being forced against my will to remain in this bed when I have the strongest desire to climb into his lap. Then I realize his hands are clean. Too clean in comparison to the rest of him. Who bathed me? He doesn't miss a beat.
I dressed you.
I blink in surprise.
It wasn't...
His brows furrow in the middle.
It wasn't like that. You had burned all the clothes from your body.
What?
During the awakening,
he says, struggling to find the words.
You lit up and were bright, like the sun. And your skin became hot enough that you disintegrated your clothes, burned away all the blood and dirt along with it.
I'm struck speechless. He looks down at his open palms. They're scorched pink.
After Fia was able to heal you, I carried you here under a blanket, back to her home, and got you covered properly.
I try and fail to digest the information he's given me. It doesn't feel real. Doesn't sound real, if I'm being honest, but I trust Acre. Call it my gut or magic, I don't care. I just know it to be true. Thank you, I tell him. He doesn't respond. I assume burning your clothes off isn't a typical reaction to the awakening? He exhales through his nose, exhaustion lining every inch of his face and body.
It's hard to say. The descriptions of late awakenings are few and far between. I've never encountered someone who's experienced it themselves.
I'm afraid to ask, but I must. Could it be my gift?
If it is,
he says, brow still furrowed.
It's unlike anything I've seen before.
That's not reassuring. After a moment, he motions to the tray of food and stands, moving toward the door.
Eat.
Where are you going?
To bathe myself,
he says with a playful smile. But I have so many questions.
The sooner we get moving, the better.
He shifts his eyes toward the hall outside the door, and I understand everything he isn't saying. Fia has been accommodating, but we're still in enemy territory. No one is to be trusted. There's a pregnant pause before he places my dagger on the tray at the foot of the bed. I give him a single nod in understanding. He turns to leave, but lingers with his hand on the door handle. The urge to go to him comes back in full force. Not just go to him, but for him to pull me into his arms and keep me there, like he did through the storm. Acre breaks the spell first, finally walking away. I lean to peek through the open doorway, and I have a direct view of him speaking to Fia in the kitchen, their muffled voices filtering down the hall. He asks for a change of clothes and follows her out of sight. When he reappears, I can see he's carrying a folded pile of fabric before he disappears out of sight into another doorway. Fia pauses at the end of the hall. She smiles before moving away. I've never given death much consideration, but I can't deny the gratitude I feel to be alive. I pull the tray of food toward me and am equally as grateful Fia can cook a decent meal, although I'm sure anything would appeal to my empty stomach right now. I open my mouth to shovel in as much food as I can, then I blink, and the poised spoon is gone. Everything is gone, I realize. I'm in another room. It's a washroom. There's a basin filling with water and a sink, and I don't have control over my hands or where I look. I'm sitting on the edge of the basin as I bend to untie my boots. Acre's boots. Not my hands. Acre's hands. I watch as he takes off his shoes and places them under the sink, one next to the other. Unlike the memory of him and Hallis, I'm not privy to his thoughts and emotions. Just a voyeur behind his eyes this time. He stands and unbuttons his pants, shoving them past his hips. In a panic, I attempt to squeeze my eye shut, and I'm thrown back into my room, back into my body. I'm staring into empty space, breathing hard as I calm the panic racing in my chest. The food that was on the spoon in my hand is now in my lap, the warmth of the meal seeping through the gown. I shake my head. I'm imagining things. Lingering effects of the root acre gave me, undoubtedly. I need to fill my stomach with something more substantial. The food is divine. I scarf down the entire plate and am licking the remnants from my fingers when Fia appears in the door. She has another set of folded clothes in her hand. She motions to my chest. May I? Nodding, I slide the blade under the fold of the blanket under the guise of making room for her to sit. She sets the clothes down as I remove my gown, shoving down my worry about propriety. According to Acre, she's seen it all already. I was spent by the time I finished healing the vital parts. I didn't have the energy to seal the wound as well as I would have liked. Her fingers are cold against my chest as she inspects the flesh. Would you like me to remove it? It's angry and red, but no longer than my smallest finger. Will it hurt? It would be mild, but there would be some discomfort, yes. I shake my head. I've had enough experience with pain as of late. I'm fine with it. She smiles. As you wish. Here is a change of clothes. You're close enough to my size. I retrieve the trousers she brought me and stand. They're light as a feather and a deep russet color, reminding me of the dresses of the girls at the market. I slide them on, relishing the softness of the material. The brassiere and tunic are just as delicious against my skin. My frame has thinned a considerable amount, but the clothes fit well. Fia smiles when I'm done. That color suits you, she says. It brings out the color of your eyes beautifully. My stomach rumbles. Fia smiles. There's more food in the kitchen. Come get a second helping. I hurry to pocket the blade and follow her out of the room. The home is modest, but as small as it is, it's warm and comfortable. Inviting, even. The food is left on a spindle table in front of a window overlooking the dense forest beyond. I wanted to prepare enough to send you two on your journey back to Kenta, she says, noticing my attention. Fix up a plate of whatever you like. I pick a slice of bread from a loaf cooling on a cutting board. It's almost too hot to consume, but I can't seem to stop myself. When was the last time you had bread in Alaha? Fia asks. I'm not sure what Acre has revealed to her regarding who I am versus what she may have pieced together herself. It's obvious she knows who Acre is. He is known by more than one name, it seems, but I don't want to volunteer information. So I rip off more bread with my teeth and shrug. Smart girl, she says, fixing herself a plate. She sits at the table, unconcerned as I inspect her home. The kitchen makes up the majority of the main living area. Tapestries hang from various walls, ranging in colors and designs. The far wall is lined with shelves of vials filled with different colored liquids. Feathers and strips of leather hang from the doorways. I peer through a window on the other side of the kitchen.
We're a little less than a day and a half from the Kenta border. There are not many homesteads between here and there due to the years of conflict within the area, but the region's full of soldiers. Best to stay away from the windows.
I nibble on another bit of bread. The door to the washroom opens, and a fresh acre pauses in the doorway, head quickly swiveling from the now empty bed where he left me to find me in the opposite direction. Hair wet and skin clear of debris, he looks amazing in a pale blue shirt that offsets his features. Handsome doesn't even begin to cover it. He strides into the kitchen, and I tear my gaze away first this time.
May I?
He says, motioning to the assortment of food.
Of course,
Fia says, pointing to a cupboard.
Bowls and cutlery are over there.
I keep my back toward them as I continue to peruse Fia's home and trinkets. It's more out of a need for distraction than actual interest, and I still can't help but listen out for the sounds of Acre's movements. The chair as it scrapes the floor, the clinking of silverware against a plate, the gnashing of teeth. The bliss when the spices hit my tongue. I spin in place. Two sets of eyes look up at me, confused by my sudden movement. I don't hear Acre enjoying his food. I feel it. Taste it. Acre does a quick scan over my person before returning his attention to his meal. It's the first time he's been able to eat real food in weeks, yet he somehow manages to not look like a scavenger as he sticks a modest portion of meat in his mouth and chews. He's even using a fork, for God's sake. There's no denying I'm jumping inside Acre's head. My powers might be manifesting of their own volition. My gifts might be more reminiscent of Vad's, the oracle in the woods, than Acre's, like I was hoping for. Acre's mind must be the easiest to leap into, considering he's who I'm closest with here. I can't imagine a worse gift. That's a lie. Not having control over my body and it regularly lighting up until it's hot enough to obliterate my clothes would be the worst gift. Being an oracle is a close second. A very close second. The door to the cottage opens, revealing an older gentleman and a boy I deduce are Fia's husband and son, if Acre's lack of concern regarding their arrival is any indication.
Good news.
The older man who comes through the door halts when he spots me standing in the living area. He pivots with a hand to his chest and bows in my direction, deeper and longer than Fia did, and it sends a tendril of trepidation down my spine, like I'm missing something.
Name's Jorgen,
he says as he straightens.
I'm happy to see you're doing well.
Unsure of the custom, I bow in return. Thank you. His son is less enthused, his greeting a mere dip of his head, and for that, I am relieved. Fia stands to greet her husband with a kiss on the cheek, then directs her son to eat. He can't be more than 16, but has the appearance of a man. He's blatant in his dislike of Acre and me as he skirts by us.
Tell me about this good news,
Fia says, pulling a chair out for her husband to sit at the table. He shakes his head and removes the knit cap from his head, using his fingers to push the errant strands of gray hair back down.
We found a couple of horses.
That gets Acre's attention. Fia is skeptical.
Found?
He gives her a look as if to say, don't ask because you won't like the answer. Sure enough, her responding tisk is pure displeasure. Acre tears off a piece of bread and dips it in the drippings.
What's the bad news?
He says, popping the bread into his mouth.
Word has spread about the boat that crashed offshore and the rebels that were found dead in the forest.
He shares a look with his wife, sharing a whole conversation with just their eyes.
10 men. Half of them were mutilated. Their eyes and tongues were plucked out.
There's a stony silence between them. Acre's eyes dart to me. That means one managed to escape. And it means blue is a truly special kind of terrifying. Acre lets out a slow, growing smile as if to convey a big fat I told you so. And, if I'm not mistaken, something like pride shines through.
Some of the townspeople have gathered together to send out a hunting party. There's fear of Kenta invading again.
Again?
He delivers the last bit of information like it should be concerning to us, but Aker doesn't so much as blink at the news as he continues to sop up sauce.
Technically, we did,
he says, giving Jorgen a look that says something along the lines of, let's be real.
We'll only take one horse, and we'll be gone by nightfall tomorrow.
Jorgen cocks his head.
That's if you're not caught. We won't be.
Mighty sure of yourself, considering the state she was in when you brought her to us yesterday,
Fia says.
You should let Jorgen and Sven accompany you the rest of the way.
That was before Jovi had completed the awakening. We're in better shape, with much thanks to you and yours, but we'll fare just fine by ourselves.
Jorgen rests an arm on the back of Fia's chair.
You're headed into the king's most guarded territory. It's not a matter of if you encounter problems, but when. If you're not clocked on sight, they're going to know who you are just by the nature of you being alone with one girl. It'll be less suspicious if we travel as a group.
Aker wipes his mouth and pushes his chair back.
I mean this with no disrespect, but you'll only be a hindrance.
We promise to carry our weight.
You're confused,
Aker says, holding the man's gaze as he stands from his seat.
I don't need the added worry of whether or not I'll need to kill you or your son if one of you decides to do something stupid while my back is turned.
Jorgen's face turns red at Aker's accusation. His son, Sven, smirks.
The metal slinger is right, Fia says. That's why you'll both give blood oaths to do no harm to either of them.
Sven begins to argue, but Aker cuts him off with a hand.
I don't care for sworn fealty.
You can't deny the truth. There's a better chance of you two making it to Kenta if you travel with us,
Jorgen says.
The oath alleviates any of your concerns. And with all due respect, Fia says, turning her attention to me, it's not your decision.
Chapter 31. The air is divine. Crisp. And green somehow, like the trees are breathing life into the world around it. Each step I take is cushioned by the moss-covered ground. Bending down, I run my fingers over the soft surface.
You can pet the lawn another time,
Aker says, strapping a knapsack to the horse in front of him. He manages a smile, but there's an urgency in his body I don't think I've witnessed before, even during our life-or-death flight from Alaha. Jorgen and Sven emerge with Fia on their heels. Aker motions for me to come closer, but I eye the horse. It's ginormous, bigger than the cattle we had in the paddocks in Alaha and stacked with muscle.
Jovi,
Aker says, impatient, hand outstretched as an offering to help me onto the creature's back. Its dark eyes watch me as I approach, as if the animal knows I'm intimidated by his imposing size. He knows I'm afraid, and he likes it. Fia's inhalation of breath comes from behind me, but I'm too nervous to turn my back to the horse. Aker's brows furrow in the middle as he keeps his gaze locked on me. He says my name again, this time in warning. I still can't tear my gaze from the horse, its nostrils flaring, muscles twitching. Aker yells,
Joe!
I meet his gaze, confused. He's looking at me as if he doesn't know what to do with me.
You're glowing,
he says, answering my unspoken question. Lifting an arm, I suck in a breath at the light emanating from my skin like a lantern, but without a flame, glowing without any fire. What in the... Is this part of the awakening?
It's your gift,
Fia says, coming from behind.
You're a light wielder.
There's a hushed reverence to her words, but I don't dare pull my gaze from Aker. What does that mean?
I think your gifts are reacting to your fear,
he says.
You need to control it.
I don't know how. And, as if my magic senses my panic, the light surrounding me grows brighter.
Careful,
Aker says, outstretched hand moving in a soothing motion as he steps closer to me.
You don't want to burn through your clothes again.
Or us,
Sven says, a hint of fear in his voice. I whisper Aker's name. A plea.
It's okay,
he says, hand hovering above my shoulder, eyes holding mine.
Close your eyes.
I don't want to close my eyes. I shake my head in protest, but all he does is nod back, slowly and deliberately, until I do. His hand makes contact with the place where my neck and shoulder meets, and I relish the comfort of his touch, the very sensation I've craved since I awoke this morning. I anchor myself to the feel of Acre's palm as it slides to the base of my neck, to the place where my collar meets my throat. His thumb sweeps over the tender skin.
Your magic exists inside of you. Find it. Tell it you're not in any danger, and to stand down.
I shake my head, eyes still closed, not understanding.
Mine is here,
he says. Reaching for my hand, he places it on something rigid. His chest, as I realize by the rise and fall of his breaths and the warmth and tick of his heart.
Find yours.
But it's everywhere. From the shuffling of my thoughts to the tips of my toes, every piece of me feels electric. I speak to it from my mind anyway, telling it to obey like Acre instructed me to. I'm not in any danger. I'm not in any danger. Everything is fine. The flow of energy is hesitant, but it furls itself bit by bit, like the way a hermit crab sinks back into its shell.
There you go,
Acre says, voice low and soothing. I open my eyes and am met with the full force of Acre's beauty. I'm so stunned my breath fails me, and I have to make a conscious decision to suck in a lungful of air. It seems to snap Acre out of his own stupor, and he takes a step back. I immediately miss the solace of his touch. The sound of movement pulls my gaze behind me, and I lose my breath for a whole new reason as I find Fia and Jorgen on one knee, heads bowed. Jorgen's hat is in a fist to his chest. Then there's Sven, hard gaze holding mine until his knee hits the grass, only breaking the connection when his chin meets his chest. My eyes flicker to Acre in an attempt to gauge the situation, but his face is set in stone, not a hint of emotion in his steely gaze. I lift my brows at him, begging him to do something. Say something. I don't know the social etiquette here. He breathes out through his nostrils and does a quick roll of his eyes.
Get up,
he orders them.
You're making her uncomfortable.
The next thing I know, Acre's hands bracket my waist and he's hefting me onto the blanketed back of the horse. I'm not scared of heights by any means, but the distance to the ground is daunting. The top of Acre's head is level with my thighs when he looks up at me. The horse shifts his feet, and I cling to the hair of its mane, throwing a leg over to the other side so I don't fall off.
You're fine,
Acre says, stroking the horse's neck but speaking to me.
He can sense your fear. Relax.
Fia hands Acre a knapsack and a roll of what looks to be bedding, and he shoulders it. I look to the family preparing for our departure. They respected my decision to trust Acres in traveling to Kenta alone, but their worry is evident on their faces. I clear my throat so my voice doesn't break when I speak. Thank you for saving my life. Fia steps forward, a sheen of moisture making her eyes sparkle.
You're going to change everything, girl.
I pause, unsettled by the warning underlining her words. It sounds more like a threat than a hopeful statement. Acre grabs a handful of the horse's mane and uses it to leverage himself onto the horse's back behind me.
If I'm able, I'll send payment,
he tells her.
You'd only be risking whoever you sent. Spare them.
He dips his head in acquiescence, and she pats my knee once in farewell. Jorgen steps forward next and bids his own goodbye. Fia has instructed him to remove the other horse from the vicinity before the search party finds it at their door. They embrace. Jorgen says something softly to her, and she cups his face in her hands, kissing him. Sven doesn't bother with goodbyes or pleasantries for any of us before going inside. What I really wasn't prepared for is how closely we're seated together. Acre's legs bracket mine, the inside of his thighs hugging my rear and outer legs, arms brushing my ribcage on each side as he situates the reins over my lap.
We're directly west of the Dark Forest,
Jorgen says.
I'd stick as close as you can to it. There are fewer sentries patrolling the area. Should we go north or south once we hit the tree line?
Acre asks.
South. Fewer trolls.
Excuse me? Trolls? Aker smiles at my reaction.
They typically keep to themselves, but people still actively avoid them.
Jorgen gives me a look.
The smell will never leave you.
Okay, yeah. South it is. Aker clicks his tongue and the horse begins to walk forward. I can feel the muscles of the animal stretch and contract, creating a deep sway back and forth with each step. I look back to wave goodbye, but the cottage is gone, like it faded into the ether, Fia and Jorgen along with it.
It's magicked,
Aker tells me.
Jorgen is an illusionist. He can make the eye play tricks on itself. He does good work. Nearly missed it yesterday.
Interesting. I can't will my body to relax when Aker's front is in complete contact with my back. Every step the horse takes creates a soft glide of his body against mine. This is a special kind of torture. I can feel the heat of my neck and cheeks, knowing I'm turning pink, but if Aker sees it, he doesn't acknowledge it, or the stiffness in my posture. A soft flap of wings sounds before Blue lands on the horse's neck. The horse's ears flick back, but he doesn't slow or show any signs of agitation. Hi! I reach out to scratch behind his neck. Jorgen's description of mutilated bodies comes to the forefront of my mind. Good job, I tell him. And thank you. Aker snorts, but even he reaches over to tickle the feathers askew on Blue's head. We move like this for hours. Blue circling overhead, Aker and I remaining quiet. It's not until the sun is low in the sky and we're deep within the forest that I begin to lose the fight to keep distance between us. The surge of energy from the awakening has slackened over the day, and the ache to use Aker as support finally wins over my stubbornness. He doesn't react when I finally allow my body to sink fully into the cradle of his, keeping his gaze ahead.
Has your stance on whether you live or die by sacrificing yourself changed since you cheated death?
Oh. He means what Vad divulged about me. I'm grateful to be alive, I say. I feel the deep breath Aker takes against my back.
Good.
There's a flicker of a moment where I can see from his point of view, a flash of looking over my own shoulder, at the reins he has draped over my thigh. But as quick as it comes, it's gone. Thank you, I tell him, not just for saving my life, but for taking care of me. His voice comes out gruffer than I expect it to.
Of course.
But also, fuck you for not telling me I was actively dying. You could have divulged that little tidbit of information to me.
What purpose would it have served?
I deserved to know. There's a period of silence as I silently seethe to myself before he says,
I was afraid. I felt like if I said it out loud, it would make it real.
He runs his thumb over my forearm.
I'm sorry. I should have told you.
His honesty douses any remaining anger I have at him. Promise me you won't withhold information from me again. Not if it pertains to me, I clarify.
I promise.
He says, resolute. Good. Now tell me why in the world Fia and her family felt the need to bow to me. He stutters out a laugh.
I think this is considered entrapment.
You literally just promised.
Healers are known to be zealots. They tend to view someone who possesses one of the four main elements as being ordained by Mother Nature herself. The world was perfect by her design. A gift to her four children, air, water, fire, and earth. But legend says they constantly fought for dominance, and it created a world of chaos, not the stability Mother Nature intended. To protect the Earth from total decimation, Mother slipped her own creations into the world. Humans with gifts fit to combat the elements.
A memory of a conversation from when we were back in Alaha resurfaces. The heirs?
Yes.
Aker pulls the reins to slow our horse into a walk when he sees the trickle of a stream cutting through the woods. He dismounts first and turns to help me down.
And the last time a light wielder walked the Earth, she ruled the Earth and the four elements within it.
I look up at him, aware of the fact that he hasn't removed his hands from my waist yet. What was she like? He doesn't need to answer. I can see it in his eyes. Whoever the light wielder was, she was not kind. He briefly tightens his hold on me before releasing me altogether. Tiny fish zoom away when I kneel next to the spring. A long-necked bird takes careful steps further down the stream as the horse slurps up water with floppy lips. I cup the cool liquid in my hands to drink, and it's the purest water I've ever tasted. Pulling the hair over my shoulder, I dribble what I can from my palm onto my overheated neck. Then I see myself from behind, through Acre's eyes. I can taste the water he's swallowing from the water skin as his eyes linger on the curve of my neck. I still have awareness of myself, like I'm in two places at once. I dip my hand in the water and pour it over my neck again, watching through his eyes as the droplets of water trail down my neck, disappearing under my blouse. I dare a look over my shoulder, cutting the connection as I meet his gaze, but his face reveals nothing as he strides toward me. Crouching down, he refills the now empty water skin, eyes no longer on me but on the task in front of him. I realize I prefer it when his attention is on me. Is that why you didn't kneel? A smile grows on his lips before he caps the water skin and looks sideways at me.
Did you want me to kneel?
My own smile threatens to reveal itself. Not if you think I'm the reincarnation of an evil ruler. His smile deepens before disappearing altogether, face turning serious.
You're not the reincarnation of anything, and you're not evil.
How do you know?
Because I do.
We're less than a foot apart, and I realize a moment too late that I'm staring at his mouth. Color stings my cheeks when I meet his eyes again, only to find he's doing the same. His eyes flit back and forth, from my mouth to my eyes and back again. He shakes the excess water from his fingertips, then brushes the stray hairs out of my face.
I believe you're going to bring a world of peace to people.
Chapter 32. The pile of dirt I've shaped and patted into place resembles a tiny mountain. It reminds me of primary school, when we learned about Mount Zalis, the tallest point in the world, on the border of Meili, upon which magical creatures are rumored to live. I stick a leaf in the top of the dirt, like I'm the first to reach its peak and claim the land. Who knows? Maybe those creatures are real, considering magic exists. It doesn't just exist. I harbor it. I'm considered an heir, allegedly ordained by Mother Nature herself. I crush the mountain with a fist.
What are you smiling about?
Acre asks. Looking up, I realize I am smiling as I watch him walk the perimeter of the makeshift campsite. He's been picking up random sticks, inspecting them, then placing them in specific locations in a circle around us. When that school of jellyfish surrounded you, he couldn't have swum back to the boat any quicker if he'd had fins.
It's a fond memory for you, is it?
He says, accent thicker around the edges. Dusting off my hands, I fold my feet underneath me. It's not my least favorite. I catch a glimpse of his teeth as he tries and fails to hide his smile. He must deem the perimeter safe, or safe enough at least, because he issues me an order to stay put and disappears into the woods. The last remnants of daylight dissipate, leaving the full moon to rise to its full glory. Acre said a fire would draw attention, but he didn't say anything about magic. I lift a palm face up. Taking a deep breath, I imagine it glowing like it did when I was afraid of the horse. But nothing happens. I close my eyes and search for that spot where Acre said magic resides and come up empty. Opening my eyes, I pout at the ordinary color of my skin. A soft breeze catches me by surprise, and I shiver. Warmth envelops me then, and I look up as Acre drapes a blanket over my shoulders.
It's the dark forest,
he says.
We're just beside its border.
It's obvious this forest and trolls are common knowledge that don't require explaining to most people. Acre settles onto his bedroll, forearm braced over his knee as he picks through his own food reserves. They look even more abysmal than mine.
It's a thatch of forest that sits in no man's land between the borders of Kenta and Roysen.
Goosebumps erupt along Acre's arms.
It senses we're near.
Are you trying to scare me? He's picking through the dried fruit and berries until he finds one suitable for his liking. I find myself fascinated by the flex of his forearms, the tendons and muscles honed to perfection. Arms and hands used for killing, but also snacking.
You're safe as long as you don't go in.
I can't help myself. I ask, what happens if you go in? He crunches on a couple of nuts.
You don't come out.
I pull my blanket tighter. Why?
No one knows. People go in only to never be seen again.
He shoves the rest of the handful of food into his mouth, done with the conversation altogether. He folds an arm behind his head, twirling his stolen blade with the other as he settles in for the night.
Try to get some rest.
I wipe the crumbs from my hands and take a swig of water. Another draft of cool air creeps over the small clearing, and I get as comfortable as I can, considering the ground is as hard as a rock. We've been traveling for weeks and weeks, and we're less than a day away from our destination. Everything feels foreign, like I'm out of place, and every leaf and blade of grass knows it. Kenta isn't my true home. I feel a tickle of awareness, and I open my eyes, finding Aker looking at me. He's on his back with his head turned toward me. His hair has grown over the weeks, and it hangs low over his brow. I've wavered on revealing the mind jumps to him. I'm unsure how he'll take it, given the violation I felt when the Oracle Vad dug around in my mind. I've done my best to stay out of his head, but I've come to realize physical touch obliterates any barrier I'm able to erect between his mind and mine. Riding a horse together does little to help. It's a near constant bombardment of his perspective colliding with my own. He has a particular interest in the place where my neck meets my shoulder. There have also been more than a few times when he's adjusted the reins around my legs and his eyes linger on my thighs. Otherwise, I'm just seeing the land and sky through his gaze. Nothing noteworthy. With the way he's looking at me now, I'm convinced he knows I'm harboring a dark secret from him. Why did the Oracle try to kill me, only to give you the location of a healer to save me? He appears perplexed. By my question or his answer, I'm not sure.
Vad has been trying to see inside my mind for years without success. My mother had me train with an Oracle friend from childhood.